makeup from yesterday, but today I can't stay for Mincha. Something came up. I have to leave right away. Okay, anyway, Vayishlach Yaakov. Yaakov sent Malachim, and nothing is said on the part of Hashem guaranteeing Yaakov, and Yaakov did it on his own, and he was in great fear later on, as we saw. And yesterday we learned in two different angles that Hashem had a displeasure with Yaakov Avinu. What are you even bringing up Esav? He's out on his way. No matter what he wants, you weren't in danger. Why did you come and subordinate yourself and humble yourself before Esav? So, in Gimel, we just began it that the opening was Rav. It's not clear who this was, Rav Huna or whoever. Posach, he opened up. Machzik ba'ozne kelev oiver misaber al riv loiloi. A person sometimes gets the attention, or literally holds on to the ears of a passing dog. In other words, the dog is going by and you get its attention, and then it will come and bite you perhaps. So that's what is a misaber al riv lolo. A person was mishzacharein, he mixes into a quarrel that is not his. Which can mean either, often we understand that to mean that there's a debate, a dispute going on. Two people are having a debate and someone else mixes in. And that's usually not a clever thing to do.
What's
misaber? Misaber can mean he makes himself either pregnant in the it, which that's one way. It's a further way, but it means you're broadening the argument by getting involved into it. So you're bringing up a new argument now, or it could mean mixing in. You're over. You make yourself cross into the argument. So anyway, but over here, misaber al riv lolo means you're. You're creating. No one's having a quarrel over here with Esav. Esav is going on his way. He's minding his own business, at least for now. And you're creating a riv, a quarrel, where normally there should not have been one. That's misaber al riv lolo. So Shmuel Bar Nachman says that it's like this. It's like provoking a war or an argument where there didn't have to be one. There was no basis for the provocation. That's what the mashal is going to show. Mashal la'arche listim. It is comparable, or it is analogous to an arche listim is the leader of a group of robbers. Not the greatest guy around, not the nicest fellow who you love to socialize with, but he is a leader of robbers. Shehoya yoshin b'farashas d'rochim. He's sleeping on the crossroads. He set up himself a tent with a sleeping bag, and he's sleeping out in a public area. Now, I come by. He's not bothering anyone. Maybe I know he's public enemy number one. Maybe I don't. But he is who he is. And he's sleeping in the open, but right now, while he is snoring, no one is bothered. So, but what it does mean is when he wakes up, he's going to be the leader. He will do crimes later. But right now, he's at a respite. He's getting his sleep. He's Mr. Ben Drusoy or so. So, Ovar Chad Vishari Meirlei. A person passes by and begins to wake him up. I take the license. This guy's sleeping in a public place. I'm going to wake him up. And I might even believe I'm doing the right thing. Omar Le, I say, kumloch devisha shriachocha. Get up, because there are bad things that are coming over here. This is a bad neighborhood. Here's not a place to fall asleep on the crossroads. Somebody might run you over. Somebody might rob you while you're asleep. So you believe that you're helping the person.
He says that to the Ghana?
Yeah, those are the words.
That's why he's there, because of the bad neighborhood. That's where he does his business.
Okay, fine. Yeah, you know, personally, I didn't ask the Ganav. But a Ganav in an area of Ganavim is in danger like the rest of us. A lot of crime is pulled by one of those on the other, you know. A lot of percentage. And I'm not saying it's cut into the territory of other groups, but that is a fact of life. It's not safe. Or at least I believe it's not safe. Come, the Ganav gets up, and now you'll see his reaction, his great appreciation for my concern. Vishori mekapeachbe, he starts hitting and assaulting the one who woke him up. I'm waking him up, I'm trying to alert him to potential danger, and what does he do? He gets up, and he hits me. Erdalankt mir afras, as we say in Hebrew. So Omar Lei, he says, Neir Bisha, the one who got assaulted, says, this guy is bad medicine. He's really a bad fella. He's horrible. What is he assaulting me for? So Omar Lei, the robber, says, Demichava va'arartone. I was sleeping and you woke me up. You disturbed me. You know, you're acting like you did me a favor, although the Ganav doesn't even go there. The says, you woke me up. That's all I know. You're bugging me. You're disturbing me. That's all. So he hit him. So that's the same over here, says the Midrash. Kach, the same thing, Omar Loi HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem said the same to Yaakov Avinu. Ledarko hoya mahalech. Vata mishalach etzlo, va'omer lo ko amar avdecho Yaakov. Esav was going on his way. He was like asleep in the neighborhood, doing beyond snoring. He didn't harm anyone. Maybe he didn't even snore. I don't know. But Esav was on his way, and you called his attention. You're the one who attracted him and got him going. And you do it by being humble, by showing weakness. Now, there's a lesson here, Lani Yostaiti, in this. This seems to be the same basic point that the other Midrashim say. But I think he's making a point here. Sometimes we think, and this is a big mistake, it's a mistake of world politics today, it's a mistake in communal relationships, and even in social relationships. People talk, make peace, make peace, make peace, and we all want that, but you have to know a lot of times you don't have peace when you show weakness. My father used to say it's a pasuk. It says, Hashem oz la'amo yitain, Hashem yivarech hasamo bashalom. Hashem gives might to his nation, and then Hashem yivarech hasamo bashalom. Then he blesses his nation in peace. He says, when do you have real peace? When your peace is predicated on strength. With weakness, you never have peace. You have somebody who steps on you. So that's, I think, the point over here, too. I wanted to be super nice to the Ganav, woke him up. What do? I get a black eye in return. Or a swelling lip, whatever.
It's like that in English, don't wake up a sleeping dog, right?
That's right, exactly. Right. This is maybe a good source for that. You don't wake up a sleeping dog. So you wake up a sleeping dog, and especially without giving it orders, without being the boss, by humbling yourself in the process, you're asking for trouble. Who are you to wake me up? That's, I think, the lesson over here that the Midrash is imparting that might not have been so emphasized in the previous Midrashim. So Rabbi Yehuda Barabbi Simon had a different opening here. Posach, he opened up with the following posach. Matoimri ki yifkoid olayich vad limadita osam olayich alufim l'rosh. This seems to be a similar message. What can she say, or what can you say, rather, that you brought the danger on yourself, and you train them on you that they should be chieftains over you. That seems to be the same message. Sometimes you give the wrong person a little bit too much covet, a little bit too much honor, too much deference, too much recognition. You are inviting someone to chop your head off. I see it in life all the time. Omer la HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem said to Yaakov, L'darko hoya mahalech, mamish word by word the same, V'atom ishaleach etzlo v'omer lo ko omer avdecha Yaakov. He was sending you, he was going his own way. And you're sending to him and saying, Ko amar avdecha Yaakov. So he opened up not so much with a parable. He opened up with a different pasuk, but he seems to be giving the same message that you are basically training him to be the one on top. Which means not only are you bringing him out of the way and no good will come out of it, but you're only humbling yourself to him, you're making him appear like a great person. So that's, he's adding that that's the damage, not just that you humbled yourself. So I'm a little more humbled, but you're giving him so-called the smicha, you're giving him an extra credential and making him much bigger than you should make him, and that probably much bigger than he actually is. That's the indictment here, where Yaakov pulled an error. Now here is an interesting machlokes in Dalet. Yeah, we still have some time. It says, Vayishlach Yaakov Malachim. Yaakov sent Malachim. What are these Malachim? So, those of us who are a little bit accustomed from whatever our background is to Rashi and Chumash, know Rashi says, Malachim Mamish. Sometimes the word Malach means a Shliach. It's another word for an agent. Malachim, Malach is not translated literally as an angel. You can be a devil and be a malach too. You can be a human. You can be an ant or a grasshopper and be a malach. Malach means an agent, a shliach of God. A shliach. A malach Hashem is a shliach of God. I'm sorry?
Satan.
Satan is for sure a malach. Malach Hamovis is a malach. Yeah. I mean, you know. But the point is, who are these malachim here? So in context, sometimes the word malach will be a human being who's a shliach. Who are these malachim? So Rashi says they're literally malachim, and I believe the Meforshim on Rashi in Chumash say, because that's the context of the psukim that conclude, that end, Vayetse, it says there that Yaakov was going on his path, and Vayifku bo malachei Elokim, there were malachim that were there, and he called the place Machnayim, and then immediately it says he sent Malachim to Esav. So the assumption is that those Malachim in context are the ones that he just met. But not everyone agrees to that. That's probably the way Rashi looks at the simplicity of the Psukim, because Rashi will take in his Perush even something that's debated upon in Chazal. Rashi does it all the time. He will take the opinion that he feels is the closest to the simple meaning of the Pasuk, or to the context of the meaning of the Pasuk, and that's what he'll use in his Perush. So Rashi assumed that it's Malachim Mamish, but you will see that there's another opinion, and Rashi's opinion is stated second and not first. Malachim, it says here in the Midrash, Elu Shluchei Basar Vadam. Yaakov Avinu took agents who are human beings. He hired a couple of Pony Express people, I guess, or whatever service they might have had at that time, or just some people where he was settled, and he asked them, go and deliver a message to Esau. And the Rabbanan say, Malachim Mamish. It was literally Malachim. Now, the one obvious question is, who cares? What difference does it make who he sent? He sent someone who was reliable, who brought back reliable information. But does it really matter if it was a person or it was actually Malachi Elyon, Malachim of God? Now that's a question. So the truth is the Yefei Toar suggests that the second opinion that they were actually Malachim is he couldn't find any human being who was ready, who had the guts to go and meet with Esau. They said, no, the Surgeon General has a warning that it could harm our health. So they didn't want to go. That's what Yefei Toar suggests. And that makes a lot of common sense type of sense. But what about those who say that it was people? So you're going to say these people weren't afraid? Yes?
I read someplace that it was Malachi Mamish, so they can understand the intent of Esau. Was really
okay, that's a pshat. Whether that fits into the Midrashim, I don't know. I mean, I'm not convinced that fits the psukim or the midrashim that they had. I think Esav was pretty open fella. I never met him, but I think that he was a pretty open person as to what he wanted. He was a murderer, and I think he was pretty open. I don't think he made a secret out of it. So I don't know. I mean, it could be that pshat is, but I don't know if I'll be able to see that from the midrash.
How did he have access to Malach HaMamash?
Yaakov Avinu?
Oh.
Yeah, the answer is yes, he did. They come down here. Maybe you have Shaychus and you're not telling us. I don't know. Okay, see, that means he does. That's why he's so strong to deny it. But in
Yavos had access to the Malach.
Sure. Sure. So Rashi, we mentioned it yesterday in Chumash, that Hagar wasn't afraid of the Malachim at Be'er Lachai Roi because she always saw Malachim coming in and out of Avram Avinu's house. People were familiar, even there are Rishayim who were familiar. There was the Malach we mentioned also yesterday in passing that destroyed the Syrian camp, Machne Yashur. And one of the few survivors who was the head of one of the heads of the army was later in Nebuchadnezzar's kingdom. And when he saw the famous handwriting on the wall with the Malach, he recognized that that was the same Malach. That's open in the Sefer Daniel. But people see, they can be seen. They're not made of a substance like we are, but they are visible to those who can see them. Right. Yeah. I mean, one of the highest levels is it's actually the second highest according to the Rambam is the Sarof. I mean, there were Nevi'im who saw the Sarof. Yeshaya Novi, Mistama saw Sarof, and others saw Sarofim. Yecheskel, maybe Yecheskel was on a lower level than Yeshaya. Not that I know it. The Gemara says that in Chagiga. Kol Mashara Yecheskel Ra Yeshaya. But in any case, the point I want to make is that a sarof is called the sarof from the word sreifa. A normal person who would look at a sarof would be burnt into a fire. But you have to see it to get burnt into a fire. From not seeing it, you won't get burnt. And lower levels of malachim than sarof, they're like 10 madrigas, the Rambam, at the beginning of the Rambam. Mishnah Torah counts out the 10 levels of Malachim. So Sarof is number 8 or 9, I believe.
But Kedusha, what we say every day, I mean, is it the highest level? I mean, we're talking about
well, the Ofanim, yeah. Then there's Chayis HaKodesh, yeah. Those are higher levels. But there are lower levels that we can see. But we'd come out of it alive if we're on the level to see them. But whatever, he sent Malachim. One pshat is Malachim Mamish, and one Basar V'dam. But the problem with the Yefei Toar, to say that people didn't want to go, in and of itself is very logical. But if that's so, what is the first opinion that disagrees? The first opinion says Yaakov Avinu found people who had the nerve to go to Esav, and the second opinion is he couldn't find. I mean, a machlokes, either it was or it wasn't. So that's a little bit hard to understand in the Yefei Toar. Now here is interesting. The Yidei Moshe has an explanation here. He does one of the sharp levels of Lomdus called Lishitasams. He shows that each opinion here is consistent with his opinion somewhere else. That's a Rambam l'shitos. So sometimes you have a difficult Rambam to understand, or a Tosfos or a Rashi, and you say, oh, he's consistent with his reasoning. The Gemara does it often. Rava l'taimei, Rav Chista l'taimei, whatever. To show that people who learned didn't just say what came to their head, they worked hard, and there was a consistency in their way of thinking. So the Yidei Moshe here does the same. He says that the Chachamim here are going with their opinion. They say that there were the Malachim that were accompanying Yaakov were tremendously vast. There were 120 times 10,000, 120 groups of 10,000 each. So he could spare some of them to be sent out. But if you go with the opinion that there was only half that amount, there were 600,000, there were 60 ten-thousands, and that was in order that the Shekhinah should dwell on 600,000. So then Yaakov couldn't afford to send some of them away and detract somewhat from the dwelling of the Shekhinah.
So 60 groups of what?
There were either 120 times 10,000, 1.2 million malachim. If there were 1.2 million, you can afford to send some, because the Shekhinah will still be around. But if you only have 600,000 that you need for the Shekhinah, then taking away diminishes the number and diminishes the presence of the Shekhinah that you want there. That's what he says. It's an interesting chap. To say such a lishitosa. Now, Rab Chama Bar Chanina finds it obvious, like the Rabbanan, that Malachim were sent out. He says, Hagar Shivchas Sora Hoysa. Hagar, in the past, was the maidservant of Sarai. V'nizdamnu lo chamisha Malachim. She had five malachim who encountered her in the well. Some say it was three, but she had a bunch of malachim that came to her, not by invitation only. They came. So Zeh, this is Yaakov Avinu, Shuavo Shel Bayis. He's the beloved of the family. The main, the Bechir Sheba Ovis, the selected of the Ovis, was Yaakov Avinu. Alachas Kama V'chama. How much more so would it have made sense that he had Malachim at his disposal to send out? Now, does this Kal V'chomer, proves that Yaakov had many Malachim, but does it prove that he actually utilized them? That you have to understand. And then he comes with another Kal V'chomer, with Eliezer, Eved Avraham, Uma Eliezer, Shehu Eved, Shehoya Eved, Vishel Bayis, Nizdavnu davgu loy kama malachim. Eliezer, I don't know why he needs the Kal V'chomer. It's a great Kal V'chomer from Hagar, who wasn't Eliezer. But Eliezer was the servant, and he was part of the family. He would have been Avram Avinu's heir if Yitzchak didn't come along. And he had a number of malachim. So Zeshuav Oshalbay is halachas kama v'chama. I mean, he had malachim when he went to find Rivka. It says Hashem will send his malach before you, Yishlach malach olifanecha. So Eliezer went with malachim. And so Yaakov was more than that. So how much more certainly? Now why do we need the second Kal V'chomer? That's something that we need to understand. Why we need... why we need the second Kal V'chomer. I mean, what is that adding? The first Kal V'chomer gives us the message. However, I think maybe the second Kal V'chomer is showing me that Eliezer, when he did a shlichus from Hashem, he had malachim. So Yaakov should certainly have malachim when he does, or be able to utilize, or would utilize malachim. So that makes me wonder why you need the Kal V'chomer with Hagar then. If Eliezer's Kal V'chomer is showing how when you do something, you do it with malachim if you're on that level, I don't need Hagar. Hagar had the malachim come to her. But Hagar was a matter that there was an important shlichus as to her having a child. The Malachim told her that she's the mother of a nation. But even with that, I don't know why that's needed for the for the Kal V'Chomer.
Could Yaakov Avinu have used the Malachim to serve his purpose?
I think that's the message here. That's why we need Aliyah, sir. That's what I believe the message over here is. But that's the message. But that Yaakov not only was fit to have Malachim, but Malachim would do what he wanted, what he needed. That's what I think is really the basis of the Kal V'Chomer. Then it says, and I'm going to have to stop soon because I have to go away to something today. I have a commitment that I need to go to. So Omar Rabbi Yossi, Yosef katnan shel shvatim hoya v'nizdav gulo shlosha malachim. Yosef was the youngest of the shvatim when his shlichus getting sold into slavery happened, and he had three malachim. That's the next week's parsha, Hado Dichsiv, when he was going for his father to the brothers. It said that he was lost in outside of Shechem. So Vayimtzaehu Ish found him, and Rashi there brings it was the Malach Gavriel. That's one Ish. And then it says again Vayishalehu, and the word Ha'ish is again Vayimtzaehu Ish Vayishalehu. What are you doing here? Why are you lost? And then Vayomer Ha'ish, the man said, the second two ishes are extra. So there were three malachim. So Zeshehu Avien Shalkula Nalachas Kama V'Chama, Yaakov was the father of all the Shvatim, not only the youngest, but the oldest. So how much more so would malachim be there to send him along on his mission? So basically, what we have over here is another evidence that logic dictates that Yaakov sent Malachim. Malachim by Yaakov should have been like second nature to send out. That's what it seems. Anyway, I hope you'll excuse me.